podcast studio in the satellite office of Inside Lacrosse in Columbia, Maryland. It's the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. And before we get started, I want to thank all of you for your support of this podcast and all of our pods here at Inside Lacrosse. Terry Foy had a good one, dropped on Monday morning, featuring several NCAA Division I head coaches after the selection show on Sunday. Good listen. Highly recommend that. And the Dan Ayburn and Kyle Devitt in the Crease podcast was coming in hot yesterday as well. So give that a listen, too. We've really enjoyed recording these shows this season, and you guys have rewarded us with your loyalty. So keep up the good work. Please hit that subscribe button, share it with friends. Also, don't forget to listen to Friday's weekend preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. Dixie, let's get it. Dix, May Madness is more than officially upon us. Hashtag drinking May Madness here at Inside Lacrosse. The bracket is out. We've had a chance to review it, check it out. And I think what I'd like to do here tonight, again, we're recording from the back porch of D Fly's house. This seems to be like our most convenient way to do this right now.
It is, with our busy schedules. Yeah. This is where what it's become, which is great. It's a nice night. It's cool, but not
it's
cold.
It's crisp.
But so do you have my microphone off during the introduction?
I turned it down.
Yeah, because when you almost forgot Kyle Devitt's name, and that's why I was just going to laugh about that.
Because
he chirped at us, hashtag chirp, on Twitter yesterday, and he got one like from Dan Ayburn.
that's so lame.
It's like, you know.
It's so lame.
It was good. So it was really funny when you... When you trip,
I wasn't forgetting it. For some reason, I was thinking of I said Dan Ayburn, and I thought of Kyle, and I was thinking of like a different last name, and I was like, it's Devitt, but I don't know what happened there.
Hey, Kyle. Yeah, nice podcast.
But they were really. We were supposed to record after them in our studio in the office yesterday. I guess it was like Monday afternoon. And now it's you're listening to this on Wednesday. Hopefully. Wednesday morning on your ride to your commute to work or school, however you pick us up. But we're recording this on Tuesday night. So we were supposed to record right after them.
Yeah.
And they knew that you were coming in, and they started chirping us like, good luck trying to follow that act. I was like, it doesn't really count when no one will hear this for another like 7 or 8 hours, like chirping us. It doesn't work that way.
I don't know. I like those guys.
Dan
and Kyle are good men, but the microphone guard always smells a little funky after Devitt. And that's like a day after they do it. So I'm glad it wasn't only a matter of hours. You know, that thing probably would have stunk to high heaven with some chowder.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Funk clear out. No, Kyle's doing much better. He made his big return.
Yeah. He was on the DL for
the down low.
I thought he was on the pup list.
No, the poor guy was hospitalized.
Really?
Yeah, it's some kind of stomach issue.
Ooh.
Yeah, really bad.
That's not good, man. Yeah, well, glad he's back.
But he is back and better than ever.
Guess who's back?
Yeah.
Back again.
Yeah, so I'll tell you who's back. May Madness.
There you go. Hashtag string king.
May Madness. Yeah, lacrosse is back.
Hashtag.
And this is where we get the full exposure and attention of the sports community.
Really?
Is now focused on the game of lacrosse. And we love it. This is our favorite time of year. Not just in Division I, but you know, the women's bracket's out. Division II and III brackets are out.
Oh,
it's very exciting. High school lacrosse is coming, too.
Shucks.
It's sort of a climax.
Isn't JUCO's national championship this weekend?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's always mid-May.
I should know that. But our bracket's out that we're going to talk about, Dix. And we're going to change the format of our show up a little bit. So it really doesn't make much sense doing it any other way than just getting right into the bracket. And we will start talking about the bracket. We'll start it the way I'll post the Inside Lacrosse bracket in the story here. But we'll look at it from sort of the top left-hand quadrant where Maryland is the number one seed and sort of just work our way down and across. We'll make our predictions for the first round games. And we'll tell you the backstory, sort of Dix's takeaways from last week as we sort of reveal each team and go through it.
Are we going to sort of reveal it, or are we going to reveal it?
There's no revelation anymore.
Sort of, kind of. What are some of the other ones? A little bit. You know, I love those interrupters. We're gonna kind of talk about. So if you sort of want to think about, what do you mean sort of? Do I want to think about it or not? I love it though. I love it.
It's a mini segue or something. I don't even know.
It's actually something in the brain, like you're trying to transition, but you feel like you might be repetitive or something like that.
Expression.
Yeah.
So we'll start with the Terps.
It's an interrupter.
Number one seed. Well-deserved, Big Ten champs. You saw them win two games last weekend. You called the games with Joe B. Out in Columbus. Great atmosphere, at least for the championship game. It was miserable on Thursday night out there. What about the Terps' performance, in your mind, makes them the number one seed? And what are their issues, concerns, expectations moving forward?
And so I thought Maryland, the first semifinal game on Thursday night, 8-6 over Penn State. What really impressed me was their defense and the ability to lock down. If you recall the 12-5 route over Johns Hopkins a week earlier, I thought defensively they were...
Wiped that from my memory.
But I'm just saying, man, you know, that defensive effort was replicated against Penn State. Solid goaltending from Dan Morris. He's been on. You know, he's been Jekyll and Hyde all year, up and down. He has been significant. You know, he's been steady Eddie over the last few weeks. Connor Kelly is a man child. The guy had 9 goals in the two games against Penn State and Ohio State, respectively. I think he's emerging maybe as the best scoring midfielder in the country. I know he scores a number of goals down on attack low and on faceoffs and transition. But he's significant. You know, Matt Rambo walked away with, I believe, an assist and a goal in the two games, but he made a play on a ground ball in the fourth quarter where he got through the Ohio State defense, shot it. Tom Carey with his left elbow knocked it away to the sideline. Rambo tracked it down. Ben Randall from Ohio State, another guy that I was super impressed with all weekend. I think he's in line for first-team All-American consideration. He checks Rambo from behind, checks his stick. Rambo falls down, and then, like, in a roll, just gets on one knee and picks up the ground ball and moves it, and that led to Heacock's eventual game winner, if I recall correctly. Anyway, they've got toughness, they've got grit, they've got athleticism. You know, I think concerns, consistency at the faceoff, and if and when Dan Morris may turn in a clunker. And I think the other thing is that they don't have a ton of depth of scoring at the midfield. Obviously, Connor Kelly has been a stud, MVP of the tournament. Tim Rotans has really stepped up his game with multiple, you know, he had 3 hat tricks in 3 consecutive games coming into the Hopkins game. He may have scored 1. I don't even know if he scored against Hopkins, but he scored another 3 against Penn State. He's turned, but it's just who, you know, on your second midfield, Sean Chisholm was playing really, really well. Ben Chisholm, excuse me, was playing really, really well, and he's cooled off a little bit. You know, they got some guys rotating through that second midfield. So really like a second midfield. And the return of Colin Heacock as well is a strong, strong positive for the Terps.
Man,
so
Heacock, the game-winning goal against Ohio State was a man's play. Needed it bad. It was about 2.5 minutes left in the game.
It was like 3:30, 3:40.
Really? So that must,
yeah,
came around there. Behind the goal, knew he was going to get hit, didn't care, pulled it in, took a hit. That was a big time play.
Well, he dished out punishment, and he saw the shorty matchup, and he lowered his shoulder and just established position, but the falling away, getting to a strong hand, sending it far post against Tom Carey, the Big Ten goalie of the year, and also first team All Big Ten, and putting it far post, and I mean that was sweet.
It was a championship play from a senior that was it was special, and then, you know, another championship play, this time by a freshman. That the trail check that Jared Bernhard made late in the game was just an outstanding athletic play. That's what, you know, wins games. That's like a championship type of play.
It's like two really good players. Ben Randall, again, you know, he was on the all-tournament team, and he was fantastic. And he's running down the field, you know, long galloping stride. You could see Bernhard just, you know, it was kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like a cheetah, you know, just waiting for its opportunity to pounce. And Randall, you know, it was crazy because Randall did have a half step. The Maryland defense locked down on the Ohio State attack, so it just left Randall and Bernhardt. Nick Myers from Ohio State, you know, he said in a post-game interview, he was like, I had the timeout, but I'm thinking maybe something magical is going to happen. And he allowed play to continue, which I don't fault. I mean, I actually really like not only that situation, but there seems to be a trend in college lacrosse this year where coaches aren't always using their timeouts. They're kind of trusting their personnel and seeing if their guys can make plays. And so that was, you know, it was a risk that he took, and he lost the gamble because Bernhardt at the last second checked the ball out of Randall's stick. And phenomenal play in a game that had a number of sensational moments.
So the Terps have the number one overall seed, well-deserved. They will host the winner of Bryant and Monmouth on Sunday at 2:30 p.m. down in College Park. Bryant gets a 5-4 win over Hobart to take home the NEC title. It's their fifth championship in the last 6 years. The senior class at Bryant, they were the ones who, in 2014, upset Syracuse in the first round, correct?
They were freshmen at the time, yes.
Yeah, freshmen then. And Monmouth, in a game that I watched on Sunday morning.
10 a.m.
Yeah. Our boy.
Breakfast from Poughkeepsie.
J.D. Ricoeur, senior attackman for Marist, who was one of our interns last summer. His team went down, the Red Foxes, in a really fun game to watch. 9-8 to Monmouth. Monmouth, what an incredible story. 0-13. This is their fourth year of their program.
Yeah.
0-13, their first year with this senior class. And then as seniors, they go, what are they, 13? They've won 11 straight games this season. They're on an 11-game winning streak. I think it's the longest in the nation. And they get a 9-8 like comeback win over Marist to claim the championship of the MAC and make it to the NCAA tournament for the first time. Of course, it's an amazing story, and that's something to be celebrated.
Well, it's neat. You know, Brian Fisher left Notre Dame to come to Monmouth and start the program 4 years ago, really 5 years ago, I guess. And like you mentioned, they struggled mightily, but this is, you know, hard work and just, you know, dedication and guys buying in. It was neat. It was really neat to watch that game. You know, I watched that game as well on Sunday, and they fell behind. You know, the Red Foxes, you know, they were all over it. You know,
fell behind and then came back.
Yeah. I mean, you can hear them, you know, you big dummy, we're going to get it. So, I got to throw in a Red Fox reference there from Sanford and Son. But, no, Keegan Wilkinson's done a wonderful job with Marist. They made the NCAA tournament a couple years ago.
They've played for their MAC championship like three or four. Like every year.
Yeah. And the MAC is interesting. You know, you got Siena that had a lot of success under Brian Brecht, and then John Sveck took over, and he got him to the NCAAs a couple of times, I think. Keegan Wilkinson and Marist. And now you got, you know, Fisher and Monmouth in a great story. They're going up against the Bryant team that really, they upset Hobart in the NEC Northeast Conference. And Mike Pressler, you know, now, like you mentioned, fourth NCAA appearance out of in 6 years. I mean, they went to the quarterfinals back in 14, lost to Maryland. So it's a team in Bryant that has been there before. They've got experience versus Monmouth, the first time entrance into the NCAA tournament. And they are in the playing game, and that game will be played today.
Yeah, tonight, Wednesday night at 7 o'clock.
Yeah,
game's at Bryant.
Yeah.
So who do you like in that game?
You know, I really don't know enough about either team. I've seen them sparingly in 2017. I think you have to, from a storyline aspect, you got to look at the experience of Bryant, and from you know, the feel good part of things is Monmouth, the magical season that they've had, and yeah, and then that win was on Marist home field, you know, in Poughkeepsie, New York. True. So to be able to pull that off and to come back, like you said, they fell behind by a couple of goals. That's impressive. So I think it's, you know, I'm not necessarily here to pick a winner. It's neat. It's a two neat storylines that will clash. And look, you know, the winner gets Big Bad Maryland. You know, as you mentioned, that game, 5:30, 5 o'clock on Sunday?
2:30.
2:30. Is it 2? I think it's 5. Is it 2:30?
Ohio State Loyola is the 5 o'clock.
Okay. Team. Yeah. So 2:30. Anish has the call on that one. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So I'm going to make a pick because we're supposed to. I'm going to take the home team.
No, why are we supposed to? Is there something I'm not aware of?
Yeah, we said we'd pick the first round games.
Oh, we would? Yeah. All right. I'll go with Monmouth then. Okay. Why not? I'll go with Monmouth.
I like Monmouth. I think they're a big physical team. They have a good goalie. They have some guys who can score. But I'm going to take the experienced team who's playing at home, who's been there before, with a coach who has certainly led his team into the NCAA many times at Bryant and at Duke. I'll take Bryant. Bulldogs.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. That's a good answer. You know, that's a solid pick.
I think they'll advance to play the Terps,
Maryland,
on Sunday afternoon.
Now, who's going to win that one, Big Mouth?
I'm going to take the Maryland.
Oh,
Terps.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah, go figure. Right.
Who do you like in that one?
I like the Terps.
Okay,
I think
the
Terps
are going to advance.
Yeah.
All right, moving down, the teams that will meet in at least in our bracket, the winner of Maryland Bryant. Albany and North Carolina. A lot of discussion about this game. So Albany gets the number 8 seed. They'll play host to North Carolina Tar Heels. That's the marquee game on Saturday. It gets the primetime time slot on ESPNU. It's at 7:30. It'll be at Albany under the lights at Tom and Mary Casey Field.
Yeah.
At Bob Ford Field at Casey Stadium. I think the game's already sold out.
Yeah.
And they're expecting a huge crowd there. Get there early. It's going to be a great day. Albany comes out of the America East. Last year, they're upset in the semifinals. You called those games. This year, they took care of business. They left no doubt. Had two decisive victories to claim the America East title.
Rewind a year. Chris Cotter and I called the America East Championship game Vermont-Hartford. And Chris will have the call with Paul Carcaterra on Saturday night, Albany, North Carolina. But, you know, we get there and we're going through just like pregame and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, our halftime guest will be Scott Maher. So he's like, it's like Scott, you know, showed up at the game. And not only that, I know a number of his players were at the championship last year in the America East. And he was like, yeah, I want them to get a look at this is the sitch. This is the situation. You know, this is your home field and two teams not named Albany are playing for the America East title. So he wanted that to sink in. So message received. The Great Danes went out and just destroyed their competition with Binghamton being in the championship. Binghamton's a good team. We've talked about them several times throughout this course of the season on this podcast, and Kevin McCune's done such a great job. But no doubt in anyone's mind, Albany throttled Stony Brook in the semis, and then they wipe out Binghamton in the championship. Connor Fields continues to play great, continues to do terrific things. And they play a North Carolina team that has become, you know, kind of America's sweethearts again after winning the ACC championship, going from a 6-7 mark to possible extinction, you know, with a loss in either the semifinals or the championship. And they beat Syracuse and Notre Dame respectively to win the ACC. I honestly thought that I really thought North Carolina was going to be a top 8 seed. I had them as high as maybe potentially 4 when you look at their numbers. And they only had, you know, 3 top 20 wins, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, to take down Notre Dame and Duke later, and then he also beat Denver throughout the course of the year. So I thought they were going to get a home game. I mean, Joe Bresci might feel better about them being on the road. I think they're 2-6.
2-6 at home
in Chapel Hill. That has the makings of a great game. And I say it has the makings of a great game because I had the Denver North Carolina first round game back in 2014. It was me and Jamie Monroe, and that was the first round game. And it turned out to be a little bit of a clunker. I mean, it was a well-played game, but Denver got a couple goal lead and then just kind of, you know, manage the game from there. So it wasn't super exciting. It was more like a, like it was more like a boa constrictor getting a hold of a rabbit or something. Like the initial grab, you're like, oh, but then it's just like a slow kind of suffocation. And that's what Denver did to Carolina. I expect this one to be, you know, up and down, fast pace, great crowd, like you mentioned, anticipated. Again, Matt Kinnear documenting the atmosphere of Albany, Maryland. I know Albany, Yale had a tremendous crowd. And that's a great facility. That is a really nice facility, good parking, good sight lines. It's very much like Ridley Athletic Complex, very much like Ridley. So it should be electric. It should be lit up in Albany on Saturday night.
Yeah, just the conversations in the Inside Lacrosse office on social media. People love Albany, think they got slighted. You know, the selection
show.
I don't think
they got slighted.
I don't either.
I don't. I mean, their RPI
saved them.
They have
a number three RPI, maybe.
Yeah.
But they don't have any top five wins. They have four top 20 wins. And then North Carolina is number 10 in the RPI. They have two top five wins, but only three top 20 wins.
And I think if you look at strength of schedule, Albany's is in like the 20s. And Carolina is in the top two or three for strength of schedule.
They're in the ACC. They also play Denver.
Hey, man.
And Hopkins. Of course, they do have a good strength of schedule.
That's their fault.
But there's been so much conversation about this game.
Yeah.
About how exciting it's going to be and the slot that it got put in for obvious reasons. I have this thought, Dix. I was thinking about this today. What if, the NCAA, think of it this way. People thought that Hopkins is overseeded at number six, and they're playing Duke. We'll get to that game later. But what if Albany got the sixth seed and was playing North Carolina, who was the 11th seed, which wouldn't be too far off from where their RPIs stand?
Mm-hmm.
It would still be the same matchup, but if the seeding was just listed differently, and Duke and Hopkins were the 8-9 game, which people could understand that too and wrap their head around, I don't think anybody would be talking about it like they are. Because people are upset Hopkins got overseeded somehow. And they feel like the 8-9, these two teams are too good to be meeting in the first round. But if you just switched it around and called them the 6 and 11 seeds, I don't think people would complain about that. Or think of it this way. What if Albany played Duke as the 8-9 game? Hopkins played North Carolina as the 6-11 game. And Hopkins was still the 6 seed. As far as the NCAA is concerned, it'd be the exact same travel because Duke, North Carolina is going to fly out of Raleigh-Durham, and Duke would fly out of Raleigh-Durham. So it'd be the exact same thing, and I think people would be much easier to wrap their head around that too.
First of all, you got way too much time on your hands to be thinking about this stuff in such
just turning the seeds a little bit.
No, I think
because people are complaining or whining about how it's not fair to Albany, how it's not fair to or. What a tough road they're going to have. Because then if they win, they have to play Maryland. Likely play Maryland. Could be the winner of the Bryant-Monmouth.
People are saying Maryland got host.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
With a potential quarterfinal game against a team that took them down to the wire, you know, in the regular season in Albany. And then, you know, Carolina, you know, Maryland went down there and ran them off Fetzer. But still, it's Carolina, you know, and they seem to be finding their groove. So I think people are saying that Maryland may have, you know, a very difficult road to Foxborough. I think the bottom line is, you know, the way the NCAA selection committee looks at it, you know, it's RPI, the strength of schedule, the wins, you know, against the RPI and blah, blah, blah. A lot of people just feel like the model is antiquated, that you know, a win that you had in February shouldn't hold as much water as a win in May, you know, late April or May. Like, I don't know if that's valid or not. But certainly it's worth discussing. So it's worth looking into. The selection process is what it is. Do I have a problem? And then people say there's too many AQs, you know, and they're taken away. You know,
that's not true.
But
I disagree with that.
But you got to have incentive for the necks and for the macks and for the, you know.
And that's what makes it so much fun.
It does. It does. Now, it's not the 17 best teams in the country. It's the 17 teams that have qualified for the NCAAs. And, you know, what is it? is it nine AQs? Nine AQs, right, Nate?
There's nine AQs.
Nine AQs. So there's nine AQs have done what they had to do. That's win their conference.
Correct.
You know?
Win their conference championship.
And the other eight have, I mean, look, the teams that were out, and I think the selection committee chair, Mr. Doris,
Gene Doris,
yeah, said that Army was first out. Now, I think that's baloney, because I thought it should have been Rutgers. Because Army and Rutgers had similar numbers. Now, look, I understand that Army had two top five wins over Syracuse and Notre Dame.
And five top 20 wins.
Right. And then Rutgers, but Rutgers' numbers were still similar to with RPI and strength of schedule.
They had a slightly higher RPI.
Right. And they beat Army head-to-head.
True.
Beat them. Last year when Rutgers was left out in the cold and Hopkins got in and Rutgers beat the Blue Jays twice, but you had to look at the RPI and the SOS were both in the 20s. You know, very weak. And losses to Princeton and Stony Brook didn't help the cause. I thought Rutgers, you know, had a better case than Army, in my opinion. You know, then you talk about Hofstra, and
get to that game.
And then anybody else? Like, I mean, was anybody else in the conference? Villanova a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, Hofstra and Villanova both lost in the semifinals of their conference tournaments. Both gave up freaky goals.
Yeah,
you know, the one that Hofstra gave up, you know, cost them. That was the game winner for UMass. So I don't really have a problem with the field that was selected. Can you nitpick over the seeding? I mean, should Ohio State be playing Loyola in the first round? You know, hey, congratulations.
Again, we'll get to those.
Congratulations, Buckeyes. You got the number three seed. Here's your reward. You're playing Loyola when you could have Air Force or Marquette come over, you know?
Yeah, and we'll get to that. But let's get back to this game, because we'll take each matchup in its stride.
Let's go.
Let's go.
You're waiting before. I'm taking North Carolina.
All right.
Yeah.
Why?
North Carolina. Road Warriors went on the road last year, Marquette, and pulled off a win on an icy field and hostile environment. That's what they're going to get, minus the icy field probably up in Albany. But I'll take Carolina. I think they're finding their stride. I think they're finding their groove. You know, question for me, does the week off help them and refresh them, or does it take them out of their, you know,
out of their
rhythm?
Mojo.
Yeah. Does it take away their momentum? You know, obviously Albany at home, man, they're going to have there's going to be a lot of purple and yellow, a lot of Scoobies in the crowd, but I'll take Carolina.
All right, I'm going to pick the Great Danes.
Okay.
I like Carolina, too. I think it's going to be more or less a toss-up game.
Austin Pafani on Connor Fields is going to be a great matchup.
That will be.
Very good matchup.
And so T.D. Erlen against
Bones
Kelly.
Stephen Kelly.
Will be a great matchup, but I like the freshman in that one at the face-off. I think they're going to control possession a little bit, and I think they're going to ride the momentum of the crowd and
the lightning
of the biggest game in the history of Albany lacrosse, really, at least in Albany. And I'm going to pick the Great Danes. Hey, Dixie, Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players and fans buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more, or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. MLL in full swing. We got May Madness upon us. Hashtag String King May Madness.
Hashtag String King May
Madness. So you got to check out the Sideline Swap Bracket Challenge. Go online. It's probably the best place to go do like your fan picks that you can do. You compete and win prizes from Inside Lacrosse, the Paul Rabel Experience, Cascade, String King, Shootout for Soldiers, Maverick, East Coast Dyes, mainly Mesh. But you fill out your bracket. You compete against thousands of other contestants.
What do you win?
See how you can do.
What do you win?
Different prizes from
a
host of people that I just mentioned.
Right. You weren't very specific. It was very broad. So I was hoping.
You got to enter to win to find out.
Okay. I'm in.
Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. You list it in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit sidelineswap.com today to get started. That's Sideline, SWAP. That's how you spell swap. SWAP. Sideline Swap.
You're kidding.
.com. All right. Moving down the bracket. Number 5, Denver, gets a 5th seed. They'll host Air Force on Saturday at 5 o'clock at Peter Barton Stadium. I'm sure they'll have a great crowd there on the front range between those two Colorado rivals. Denver, though, gets an at-large berth. A lot of people expected them to pull down the Big East automatic qualifier. They were upset by Marquette, as we mentioned before, on Thursday. Kind of put a lot of, knock some teams off the bubble or ruin some hope. I remember walking in the office on Friday. I said to Terry and Matt Kinnear, I was like, so what's that loss mean? And they're like, well, Rutgers is probably out.
Yeah.
And it was, they said it at the same time. So unfortunately, that sort of burst Scarlet Knights' bubble. They'll host the Air Force team that had that made it through the rigors of the SoCon and won the SoCon championship in Richmond against the Spiders. Talk about these teams, Dix.
I mean, obviously, Denver, it starts at the faceoff dot with Trevor Baptiste. You know, heck of a player. Yeah, I don't know. Denver's, they're good. They're good, but you're not sold. Like, you're not sold on the Pios the way you may have been sold on them in years past.
I think we would have been sold on them if they would have run roughshod through the Big East tournament as expected. But now we're all have a little bit of doubt in our mind about them. They slipped down to the number 8 RPI team. You know, they beat Marquette one weekend, and the next weekend, you know, they go 16-8, and then they lose 8-10 on the road. It's
eight. They lost 8-10.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be 10-8?
Yes. That's one way to say it. But it's, you know, Connor Canizero, a good but not great season. Not the dominant season that we thought. Ethan Walker has turned out to be the leading scorer on that team. Trevor Baptiste, though, you know, game in and game out, he's a dominating force and something you have to game plan
against. They had a ton of turnovers against Marquette. And it was interesting because it was like repeat weekend. You know, it was kind of like week 17 in the NFL where the Jets are playing the butt bungles and a week later they're going to play in the playoffs. You know, so what do you do in that situation where you're not going to really change a whole lot? I mean, obviously lacrosse is a little different in that, you still get a win. You know, your RPIs helped out, your strength schedules helped, you know, all that, all those metrics are still helped or hurt. But really, you know, it's kind of a no-lose situation for Marquette. So I think that, you know, maybe they rope-a-dope a little bit on the Pioneers. They don't show them everything in that first meeting, and they end up having to play them a week later, and they knock them off. I mean, it was Providence did the same thing to Villanova. You know, Villanova smoked the Friars the week before, and then the Providence comes back and turns the tables in the Big East semifinals. This is a team, you know, Denver needs a little bit better goaltending, a little bit more consistency on the offensive end. They're going to be a tough out. And we said Maryland has a very, very difficult road to Foxborough. And I think Denver may have the most I'm not going to say it's the easiest by any stretch of the imagination, but they might have the most favorable draw. Because if they win against Air Force, they're playing the winner of Notre Dame Marquette. And I'm sure we'll talk about that later, but Notre Dame is banged up right now, and Marquette, you know, you don't think that they're going to, you know, be jumping out of the off the Rocky Mountains to face these guys. So, you know, I think Denver's in a, maybe the best thing that could have happened to Denver was losing, but take into consideration last year, you know, got chugging along in the Big East, lose to Marquette in the championship game of the Big East tournament last year. And then they lost a week later at home to Towson in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Can Air Force replicate that?
Well, Air Force, again, the SoCon winners, they're 12-5 on the season. They lost to Denver 14-6 earlier this season, in the second week of the season, back on February 11th. They beat Jacksonville 11-8. They beat Richmond 9-6 to claim the SoCon championship this weekend. They may have lucked out on the draw a little bit due to geography. You know, they may not have been, you know, the 12th best team in the field. Or the garnered the 12th seed without some geographical help. But nevertheless, they'll play Denver, and they've had a pretty good season. I mean, the Air Force is in the NCAA tournament again. My favorite player is sophomore midfielder Jack Flynn. No relation. 13 goals, 9 assists on the season.
And why is he your favorite if he's no relation?
It's Jack Flynn. I got a brother named Jack Flynn. I got a nephew named Johnny Flynn. Chris Walsh from Finksburg. 36 Gilman goals, kid. 26 assists on
terrific
the season.
Terrific player. Yeah. Terrific player.
Nick Ruby from Texas, 45 points. provide the bulk of their scoring, along with Grant Gould, who has 31 points, and my cousin, I'll just call him my cousin, Jack Flynn, with 22 points on the season. It's going to be a good game.
It will be a good game. It will be a good game. It's not going to be the 14-6 drubbing. At least you don't think it will be. Never say never. But Air Force, they open the season with a nice win over Duke. Then they get drubbed by Denver, you know, who doesn't sometimes, you know, especially in Peter Barton Stadium where this game will be played. And then they get trounced by Marist 10-4, and then you're thinking, all right, well, maybe Air Force is going to take a step back this year. And I mean, they had their ups and downs, but Eric Saramet always does a terrific job with this program, and he gets players and he gets them to buy in to their philosophy, and the proof is in the pudding. You know, the results that these guys have gotten are terrific, and the Falcons will be a tough out. They will be.
Yeah.
Two teams that play every year in the regular season early, very familiar with one another, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a good game. I do, but that with that being said, I will, you know, the Denver loss a week ago, the experience of last year, you know, losing in the first round, Trevor Baptiste at the dot. I think Denver is going to be too tough to overcome for the Falcons on their home turf.
Yeah, the Falcons, again, have won 5 straight, 9 of their last 11, but I think they are going to – I think they'll fall this Saturday evening in Denver. I like the Pios to move on to face the winner of our next game, Notre Dame-Marquette. Two teams who know each other pretty well as well. Notre Dame, injury issues. Do we got a status update on Perkovic or Ryder Garnsey?
I don't. No, I don't.
They did not play
in the game, lost
the Fighting
Army.
Irish, lost to Army.
Yeah.
They were held out of that game. I'm expecting that they'll play. That's what I'm going
to... You'd have to assume.
I'm going to expect that.
Perkovic is a senior this year, right?
Yeah.
Could be his potentially last game.
Yeah. So I think they're going to play. And Marquette, another run through the Big East tournament, their second Big East championship in a row.
Yeah.
This is their 5th season of lacrosse. They've won the Big East championship and made it to the NCAA tournament a couple years running. Hats off to Joe Amplo and his staff for what they've done up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I think Amplo's name is swirling around as being a possible candidate for Michigan, maybe Delaware too, but more Michigan has been the chatter. And this is a group. You know, the Golden Eagles are a good team. Their strength of schedule is top 8, I believe, when you look at it at the end of the day. Top 8 strength of schedule. So these guys, you know, didn't really shy away from anybody. They played Penn. They played Richmond. They got smoked by Richmond, actually, back in late February, 9-2. Played Ohio State. They played Villanova. Played Notre Dame in the regular season. Lost 11-10. Played Duke. So... I mean, these guys played a great
good
schedule.
Out-of-conference
schedule. Really, and great out-of-conference schedule, you know, plus positive, conference games culminating in another Big East championship equals preparation and, you know, preparedness for the postseason, for the NCAA tournament. And this is a program that was in a year ago. They've got experience. And, they could pull the upset. No question. They could pull the upset.
Yeah, they played early this season. They lost to Notre Dame 11-10. I think Sergio Perkovic had 6 goals in that game. They don't score a lot of goals. They only score about 8 or 9 goals a game.
Well, this has always been a defensive-minded.
Yeah.
You know, their best players that come to my mind, B.J. Grill on defense, and what was it, Liam Burns, the long-haired, long-stick midfielder. Joe Amplo, I interviewed him a couple years ago, and Burns' name came up, and he said... What did he say? He said, Burns plays like a guy who's in jail, or he works out like he's in jail. You know, he's just like always just getting after it and lifting and trying to get bigger and stronger.
So. They have one of the best names in lacrosse. Their junior goalie's named Cole Blazer. He's got 140 saves.
Look,
on
let's
the season.
Not even let's not even go there, especially saves after that, especially 54%. that nonsense on that Fakakta Pro Football Talk Show or whatever, where they. did that whole, let's not, it's not even.
Cold Blazer, it's just a cool
I
name.
I know, but let's not go down that road, man. What are you talking let's about? Not go down that road. Give giving people ammunition to make fun of lacrosse.
But their leading scorer is Ryan McNamara, has 33 points on the season.
Yeah.
Tanner Thompson has 30 points. So I expect this game to be really low scoring.
I think that, you know, you look at
like 5-4.
Notre Dame with their two best offensive players, even if they play, they're going to be, are they going to be 100%? I don't think so. Not what I saw in the ACC tournament. I mean, Ryder Garnsey had a boot on, you know, and just take the boot off when he's ready to play. You know, and Perkovic didn't look anywhere near himself shooting the ball. So that's a big question mark, really big question mark for Notre Dame. That being said, I mean, you tip your cap to Notre Dame. I know they lost to Army, but that's a really good Black Knight team. That's a very good lacrosse team. You know, so they were able to score 11 goals. The final was 12-11, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to look. But, you know, they still scored 11 goals, I think.
Which game are you talking
Vindicate
about?
Vindicate me? The Army-Notre Dame game. So I'm trying to make a point. Like, without Perkovic, without Garnsey, they can still put points up.
It was 10-9 in overtime.
Oh, okay. So they scored 9 goals. I thought it was 12-11. Yeah.
I mean, they have a deep, talented roster of top-notch recruits.
Brian Costabile out of Mount St. Joe, freshman's having a real nice season. You know, Mikey Wynn's always a dangerous finisher. It's just...
Yeah, I remember seeing Mikey Wynn play when he was a senior at St. Paul's in maybe the MIA championship game, and they lost that year to Boys Latin, maybe. But he was unstoppable. I think he had 6 or 7 goals, and it was the best player on the field for that game.
Heck of a player.
Yeah. All right, let's move across the bracket. Oh, by the way, I'm going to take the Fighting Irish in that one.
Are you?
The number 4 seed over Marquette in a very close game. I'm saying 5-4, 6-5 or something like that. 1 or 2 goal games at the most.
You know what? Man, it's hard. I'll go with Notre Dame as well. This is one that's causing me pause. Yeah. I almost picked my second road dog.
I'm gonna expect Garnsey and Perkovic to play. If they don't play, then it would all bets are off.
And again, it's not about them, like how effective can they be playing. But hey, they played against Duke and weren't lighting the world on fire. You know, still made plays and they beat the Blue Devils. I mean, that was just tough for both of them to play with their respective injuries twice in 3 days. You know, that took its toll. I'll go with Notre Dame as well.
All right. Moving on to the top right-hand corner of the bracket, where number 3 Ohio State pulls down its highest seed ever in the NCAA tournament, and they will face a surprise matchup for them. Their award for garnering the number 3 seed is to host the red-hot Loyola Greyhounds, who a lot of love for this team out there, too.
There is, and wow. I mean, I covered Ohio State a few times this year. You know, watching them practice in January and, you know, had a chance to catch up with the coaching staff this past weekend. And these guys are impressive. I mean, they really are. When you think about the job that Nick Myers has done in Columbus, you know, Brad Ross is the offensive coordinator. Corey Balkin is the face-off coach, you know, works with Jake Withers. And then they've got Travis Crane as volunteer assistant with a heavy Baltimore connection. You know, they've gone from a team a couple of years ago with Jesse King and Logan Shuss and Turner Evans and, you know, some other really good players, but it was all kind of smoke and mirrors, you know, picks. And now they got guys that'll run by you, run over you, run through you. I mean, Trey LeClaire, I thought he was going to put a hole in the net, you know, the way he was shooting the ball against Johns Hopkins. Thought he forced things a little bit in the championship game against Maryland before he finally settled down. I mean, these guys go 8 middies deep. And on attack, you know, you got Fennell, you got Colin Chell, you got LeClaire. Carey's a good goaltender. They got two terrific long stick middies and Freddie Freibot and Hendrick. And that's a guy that lost his glove, unfortunately, in that pick play. I mean, that is rarely happens.
All right, so I got a question about this.
Yeah.
I've seen this a couple times. Guy breaks his stick.
Yeah.
And he runs off the field, leaves the stick on the ground.
Yeah.
To go get another stick. Why isn't he allowed to pick his stick up and run off the field?
I mean,
not leave equipment on the field.
It's just if you just leave it, then there's no reason or no temptation to play with it. In other words, you pick up your stick, you know, and you're running by it. Maybe the ball carrier is in your vicinity, and you decide to, you know, whack them with the head of your stick or something like that. So I think it's more just...
Is it a rule, though? You're not allowed to pick it up?
That is very, very fine and very, very technical. I'd have to look at the rule book.
But then the glove comes off, and that is just against the rules to play?
So there's a nuance to that.
So he can't pick his glove up? Is he supposed to run off the field with that, too?
You going to let me answer? Or you know,
these are my questions.
Okay. He loses the glove, right? He can easily go back and pick the glove up, put it back on. Takes him out of the play, though. Or you got to run off the field. But if you notice, when he lost the glove, Matt Palem, who was the trail official in this instance, is pointing at it. Keeps pointing. And it looked, from our broadcast position, it looked black. It's gray. You know, it's the scarlet and gray of Ohio State, and their gloves are gray. So I thought one of the referees lost a shoe. So I'm looking at it like their feet. And then all three flags go flying, and I'm like, okay, now I know what we got. So had Henrik not played the ball, in other words, he can stay out there on the field with no glove. He just can't get involved in a play. Can't play defense, can't pick up a ground ball, can't catch an outlet pass. Once he started, he got in the middle, involved in a play, that is playing without your equipment, flag down. Now, if Henrik was an offensive player, you know, the play would have been blown dead immediately, and the kid was to be allowed to put his glove right back on. Because if you're on offense, there's clearly an immediate danger and safety issue. You know, if you lose your glove, then, you know, if you have the ball or you're about to receive the ball, so you can stop play and allow the offensive player to put his glove back on. But a defensive player, no dice.
Offensive players always get all the advantages.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
Chicks dig the long ball on the goals, man.
Chicks dig G's and A's.
Looking at this Buckeyes roster, they got guys from everywhere. British Columbia, they really do. Ontario, Maryland, Massachusetts. Jasinski's from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they have some Ohio guys. Pennsylvania, Freibot's from Delaware. Minnesota.
Who's from Delaware?
Freddie Freibot.
Hmm. He's bringing some pride to that state.
Washington State, Florida, Connecticut. Everywhere. California. There's even a kid from New York. I mean, plays lacrosse in New York?
You look at their roster. You know, Ohio State is not a who's who alumni of Under Armour All-Americans. Like these are just like...
They're developing players out there.
They develop players. That is, hit the nail on the head. They develop players. Good.
Yeah. They got some big dudes.
They do. Johnny Pearson is no shrimp. Ben Randall and Eric Evans are like body doubles. 1'6'3", 1'6'4". They have the same frame, very long, rangy, athletic. Yeah, they're tough to beat. They are there. And then we haven't even started talking about Jake Withers, you know, the junkyard dog.
He's a bad man.
At the midfield. I mean, that kid is tough.
He's a good nickname.
Yeah. I just said junkyard dog, but you can put that on everybody. But no, I mean, just call it, man. He's a gamer. He's a competitor. And that's going to be a tough matchup for Loyola to compete with. You know, you talk about the Greyhounds.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think it starts with Pat Spencer.
Man, he's good.
He's incredible. He's incredible. I mean, I think right now, if I had to vote for the Tauroton, I think I might go Matt Rambo 1, Spencer 2, and Connor Fields 3. I think that's your first team All-American attack right there, those three, with Ben Reeves maybe being a fourth out of Yale.
Can you imagine? This could be the second team All-American attack is Ben Reeves, Dylan Malloy, and Connor Cannizzaro.
Ben Reeves, the Dylan three guys Malloy, who were like, else?
And Connor Cannizzaro.
Yeah, the three guys like the that were first.
Second or third teamers. Yeah. And they
three
were
three Tauroton finalists
they were
last year.
Yeah, they were three first teamers last year. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Man.
Rambo's had an incredible second half.
Definitely.
I mean he's incredible been great. Second half. But it's going to be fun. Ben Randall on Pat Spencer is going to be worth the price of admission. Face-off game. Loyola's no slouch at the face-off game. They got a great face-off coach in Steve Vaknes. You know, he'll match wits with Corey Balkin.
Graham Savio is their first.
Savio, yeah. Jacob Stover's played much, much better lately.
MVP of the
Patriot League. You know,
good for him.
I think this is all about, I think it's all about defense because Ohio State's going to get possessions. You know, can this Loyola defense hold up? You know, they were terrific in the Patriot League tournament. Can they replicate that effort? Because defense has been the Achilles heel all year for Loyola. Offensively, I think they're fine. Ohio State's defense is very, very good. But, you know, when you've got Spencer and guys dodging for the midfield like Brian Sherlock and Romar Dennis, you're gonna get opportunities. You're going to get a chance to look at the cage. But, you know, again, Withers, man. Withers, to me, tilts this in the favor of Ohio State. And this is a quarterfinal worthy matchup. You know, it's a little bit of, I mean, we're excited to watch the game, but a little you know, a little disappointed that it's so early in the tournament.
Yeah, and I don't want to diss Loyola. I just, there's a lot of respect, a lot of love for the Greyhounds, and a lot of it's turned towards like Ohio State. You know, it's a shame, you know. Again, this is their reward is matching up with Loyola. But Loyola had 17 RPI.
I know, yeah.
I mean, who's their best win of the season? Is Towson, the tournament team?
Towson and Army, right?
Yeah, they beat Army twice.
Yeah, I think that's it.
They beat one tournament team.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at...
No, you are.
They beat one tournament team.
Lost to Virginia, lost to Hopkins. Got shellacked by Duke.
Lost to Bucknell by a goal.
Lost to
Bucknell. I don't really think that's crazy.
Lost to BU.
That they are the 3 seed playing the.
Well, look,
you know,
it's Loyola, 5 years removed from a national championship, 1 year removed from a championship weekend appearance, and a lot of people feel like if they can get good defense, like they got in the Patriot League tournament, that they could return the championship weekend. I mean, this is I had these guys like top 6, I think, preseason. You know, and that's something else that's not lost on Ohio State either. I think they're a preseason number 22 with no preseason All-Americans. So that's a team that plays with a tremendous, tremendous chip on their shoulder.
I think they find a way to slow down Pat Spencer, and I think the Buckeyes are going to run away with this. I don't think Loyola can cover all the guys that can score goals for Ohio State. I think the Buckeyes win this by several goals.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the margin of victory will be, but I'm definitely going with Ohio State as well.
So, Dix, let's move down the bracket. Johns Hopkins gets the number 6 seed. They'll host the Duke Blue Devils at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon at Homewood Field. Hopkins, a little controversy around their 6 seed. People think that's their seed too high. Riding the coattails of the Big Ten was a comment that was made during the selection show.
I have no idea what that meant. I don't understand.
I guess it meant like the RPI of this and the strength of schedule of the league pulled everybody up because Maryland, Ohio State are so good.
But I guess because you play the Big Ten and you can't help but I don't. Everybody's body of work kind of stands on its own.
The Blue Jays are 8-6. They lost in a semifinal game to Ohio State, 15-13.
Yeah,
they have 2 straight losses. Maryland and Ohio State may be the 2 best teams in the country, and a lot of people have lost to those 2 teams. Blue Jays have won 4 of the last 10, you know. I don't know. We'll talk about this game a little bit. I'd love to get your thoughts on the Blue Jays. You just saw them a couple of weeks in a row. You think the goalie play needs to improve?
Do I think the goalie?
A lot of people think there's a Jekyll and Hyde to this team. I think it really is about who they're playing. That has a lot to do with it. You know, they're 2-3 in their last 5 games, but it's Ohio State twice on the road and Maryland on the road. You know, I don't know. I think the Blue Jays are right where they're supposed to be. They have wins over tournament teams like Loyola and North Carolina, Penn State. We'll see, but I think this committee did a good job of seeding overall, and I'm not shocked by the Blue Jays. I know people will say that's a homer thing, but there has been disdain and hatred for the Blue Jays on social media and maybe even on a couple other podcasts at Inside Lacrosse, and I just don't get it. I don't see why people are so bent out of shape about it.
Well, you know,
other than the fact that people hate Hopkins, I get
that. That's something that is very real. When you're called the Notre Dame of college lacrosse and the Yankees of college, you know, a lot of people hate Notre Dame, but you love Notre Dame, of course. And, you know, Notre Dame University, I should say, Notre Dame football.
My grandfather went there.
But the Yankees, you know, everybody hates the Yankees too. So it's just, look, it makes sense based on the, again, the selection model. We talked about this earlier in the
strength of schedule,
in the podcast. You know, maybe it's antiquated. Maybe we need to revisit the selection process for the NCAA tournament. The bottom line is the last 2 weeks, Hopkins has stunk. They have. And they fought back against Ohio State, something that they weren't able to do against Maryland. But they've got – this is not the time of the year you want to have goalie problems. They got goalie problems.
They have, yeah, they're playing two guys.
Got goalie problems.
You got two goalies. You don't have one.
You know, and I have to imagine that Gerald Logan starts this weekend, you know, based on the two performances that he had coming in relief. But Hopkins just slides way too aggressively. They slide way too early. Their short stick defensive midfielders get picked on a lot for good reason. And, you know, offensively, I mean, Hunter Moreland is fighting his heart out on faceoffs. Craig Medeiros came in and gave him a nice little lift against Withers. But I just see this. They look flat at the opening whistle 2 weeks in a row, in arguably their two biggest games of the season, the rivalry game and then the Big Ten semifinals. So
no doubt about that. They did start very slow in both those games,
yeah,
but fought back in the second half. Too little too late, but you know,
I'm looking for guys, you know, I've had the pleasure of covering, you know, this group of this Hopkins group for the last, you know, 3-4 years. You know, I'm looking for John Crawley to step up. Like, where's John Crawley? You know, he's scored so many big goals during his career at Homewood. It just seemed like the only player that could get anything done the other night was Joel Tinney.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what, when I'm watching the game against Ohio State, and I was texting a couple people, it really did look like there. I was like, this is my text. Who on Hopkins, offensive player on Hopkins, can beat a guy one-on-one,
yeah,
and make a play?
Tinney.
But not when he's got a pole like a Ohio State put on him, who, you know, a big physical guy who just can and muscle him.
Yeah.
But there's not many guys, or if any, who really can make a play for themselves in the 6-on-6.
Yeah, and that's a problem.
But we're playing against two teams that are very good. And
I agree. And look, you're not going to get an argument.
Who know them
me,
very well too.
But they also got blown out by Princeton. You know, the Ohio State game the first time around, Hopkins was actually leading at halftime, and then the kind of, you know, Jack Dzinski burned him for 7 points.
You talk about short stick defensive.
Yeah, I mean he took the short sticks and
blew right by him
and did. And they even put a pole on him eventually, and they took him.
All right. Well, let's talk about Duke then.
Justin, oh, I thought you wanted to talk about Hopkins.
We will. They're playing each other. Justin Gooderding has got 82 points on the season.
That's
He's quietly put together an incredible junior season. He's got 44 goals and 38 assists. He and Jack Bruckner lead the Blue Devils in scoring. Bruckner's got 44 goals and 15 assists. The Devils have been playing very well, as you'd expect a John Donowski team to really get better as the season goes on. They lost a 6-7, 7-6, if you will.
6-7.
Semifinal game to Notre Dame in the ACC tournament 2 weeks ago, but came back this weekend, had a game scheduled on Long Island against Boston University, and just blew out BU.
And BU's a good team.
18-8, yeah.
Good team.
Talk about the Blue Devils.
Well, look, it's kind of a typical start. 3-2 at the end of February. You know, losses to Denver and Air Force. Wins over High Point, Cleveland State, and St. Joe's. Okay, so nobody's getting really excited. And then the first weekend in March, they beat Richmond by a goal. That's a Richmond team that, you know, beat Carolina this year. They beat Duke last year, and history didn't repeat itself. A week later, they smoke Loyola 15-7, and then that's when the conversation starts. Oh, boy. Yeah, watch out for Duke. Dino's got another good group down in Durham, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, this is a very good team. And you know, you mentioned, I think Gutterding has just as long of a point streak as Matt Rambo. I think they're both at like 52, 53 games, which is pretty impressive. Jack Bruckner's, you know, exceptional. And I think the biggest difference from Duke this year than in past editions is Danny Fowler's playing well between the pipes. You know, they have looks like they've got a goalie that's turned a corner. And then, but their defense is really good, and young, and athletic.
Cade Van Raphorst,
JT Giles Harris.
Yeah,
that's a good group. Yeah. You know, that's a really nice group, and they're maturing and they're playing very, very well as a unit. So I think that's something that's gonna, you know, look. Neither Hopkins nor Duke faces off incredibly well. So possessions will be key. You know, especially when Hopkins can get possessions. You know, they can tend to dictate the tempo of a game and have it suit their needs. But they've got to be ready to play. Hopkins has to be. It's their first home game in the NCAA since, I think, what, 2012 maybe?
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's been a while since they've been home. And they've got a rich playoff history with Duke. Obviously, 05 and 07, Hopkins' two most recent national championships, both won against Duke. But the last time these guys tangled in the NCAA tournament, I did that game down in Durham. That was 2010, and that was ugly. That was, I think it was 18-5 Duke. I don't see that happening again on Saturday, but yeah, my gut's telling me to take the Blue Devils, to take Duke in this game.
Everybody.
I don't know. Again, based on what I've seen out of Hopkins the last 2 weeks, can they turn it around? You know, can they refine some magic, you know, that they had earlier in the season?
I'm going to go in a different direction. It's a shocker, but only because everybody is loving the Blue Devils. The money is all going one way, and I'm going to take the home team, the team that was seeded number 6.
The team that raised you.
The team
that was there for you.
You know,
when you got dumped in college, who was there for you? Hopkins Lacrosse.
I'm going to take the team that pulled down the number 7 RPI ranking and gets the home game. I'm going to take the Blue Jays only because they're the team who's like, no one is giving us any credit.
They were there for me when I was by myself on Friday nights.
You know, Petro right now is giving the nobody believes in us speech.
Sure.
Everybody, it's us against the world. It's the guys in this locker room right now, outside the quarter center. Nobody thinks we can do this. So I'm going to take the Blue Jays.
All right.
Okay, down.
Shocker of the week.
Last quarter of the bracket left. Number 7, Penn State will host the Towson Tigers, the winner of the CAA, on Saturday at noon. Kicks off the NCAA tournament in Division I, first game of the weekend from State College. I'm going to just pick this one straight up. This is my first upset.
Go ahead.
I'm liking the Towson Tigers in this.
All right.
I think Coach Nallen's going to find a way to win this game.
You might be right. Mike Corey, Don Zimmerman, I think, are on the call for this one. Intriguing matchup. Former foes in the CAA. Penn State was in the Colonial before the formation of the Big Ten. So two programs familiar with one another, similar styles. Traditionally, I think this year Penn State is much more wide open than Towson. But you know, Penn State was a team that used to be, you know, kind of built on defense, and now they're more of an offensive-minded team. But Towson's senior class is special. I called their win over Hofstra the last weekend of the regular season in the CAA, where they beat the Pride 10-8 and took home field advantage in the CAA, which proved to be beneficial as they cruised. But you know, in that game, all 10 goals were scored by seniors for Towson. Matt Hoy, senior goaltender, struggled. You know, there was even like an open competition the Friday before the Hofstra game. And Sean Allen didn't even make his decision until later that day as who was going to start. Matt Hoy, he was the MVP of the CAA tournament, or the championship game at least. But, you know, he's making saves. You know, not a ton of them, but ones that he should make, I guess, and keeping them in games. But that's a special senior class. You know, Joe Sider and Ryan Drenner and Drennan and
Mike Lynch.
Drenner? Is it right?
Yeah, Drenner? Ryan Drenner.
Drenner. That's it, Drenner. Mike Lynch, Jack Adams.
Tyler Conan.
You know, Tyler Mays is a demon at long stick midfield.
Tyler Young in midfield.
Yeah, yeah. Tyler Young had 4 goals coming into the Hofstra game, he's like for the season, he scored 4 against the Pride.
Yeah, we'd be remiss if we did not talk about the CAA semifinals and the Hofstra Pride.
Oh, my goodness.
The UMass last-second goal where the comments after Jeff Shannon wrote the story for Inside Lacrosse. His, like, the comments, the quote from the players scored the goals.
Was it about Baltimore, like, Hamden, and crime statistics?
I didn't know what to do.
G-Shad loves the political angle on Twitter.
Born and raised. Born and raised in Hamden.
Curly. What up?
Went to Curly.
What up, Fryer?
Yeah, he cares about his community.
He does. He does.
But
he wants one of those blue boxes on his block. the cameras, the blue cameras, you know. You just watch The Wire, right?
Yeah, I watched it 15 years
ago.
I didn't just see it like you. It's fresh my in your bad. Mind.
Sorry. Sorry.
I live The Wire.
I didn't stream it on Hulu or something like that. What do you got, Amazon Fire over there, too?
No, I've got Apple TV.
Like a real human being. Sakes.
But I also have HBO, like everybody else is supposed to.
I have HBO.
Oh, you do? Good for you.
And I get my Netflix DVDs mailed to the house.
All right, well, we're straying here. We have a lot to talk about.
Yes, my bad.
So Penn State had a great season, offensive-minded team. Both teams had pretty good face-off guy.
Alex Woodoff for Towson, Gerard Arsari for
Penn State.
But what I like about Penn State at the face-off is they can mix you up a little bit. Billy Lombardi faced off predominantly on Thursday against Austin Henningsen and the rest of the Maryland face-off guys. So they go too deep and at the face-off, and they can even throw a shorty and ask Drake Crines to face off as well, the graduate student, senior. I mean, look, both goaltenders aren't the greatest. I think Colby Canise can play a little bit better. I think defensively, Towson has the edge. I think offensively, Penn State. I tell you what, though, Towson's going to be looking at that game film. They're going to be looking at what Maryland did to Penn State to try to maybe capture some of that magic. But this is going to be a fun game. I think it's going to be a fun game. I really do.
Yeah, this is,
and there should be a really. I'm trying to remember, I don't even know if Penn State's out of school yet.
I don't think so. I think they go late.
So, okay, but so that I was going to say, if they were out of school, that could hurt. But expect a vibrant environment.
Yeah.
And Penn State's on cloud nine right now. They just got a $3.5 million gift for the formation or the renovation of their lacrosse field. So $3.5 million coming to Happy Valley for lacrosse.
So what's your prediction in this game?
Gosh, I mean, I've seen both multiple times live calling their games. I think, God, it's hard to bet against Towson. You know, the effort that they gave in the first round against Notre Dame, you know, on the road 2 years ago, just falling off, just coming up short. The shocking win over Denver last year. But I got to believe that I think Penn State, you know, I think this team is good. I think they feel like they've got a lot to prove. You know, I mean, you're sitting there saying there's controversy over Hopkins being seeded six. I mean, there's a lot of people that are upset that Penn State is seven. You know, when you look at their numbers and their wins or lack thereof, as people would say. But this is a very exciting lacrosse team. And they've got good senior leadership, too, with Mike Sutton in the midfield, Matt Florence, Nick Aponte, the attackman, Drake Crines, like I mentioned before. So I like Penn State at home.
I'm going to go with, as I said before, I'm going to take Towson. Like their senior class, this is a team that has gone on the road and upset teams in the past in the NCAAs.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Tigers. Dick's last game of the bracket, last game of the first round. The number two seeded Syracuse Orange host the Yale Bulldogs Sunday night, 7:30. ESPNU.
Rick Beardsley's going to be in that crew. Number 47.
The legend.
Yeah.
Rick Beardsley.
That'll be worth flipping the TV on.
We should have a give and go some week of your favorite Rick Beardsley stories. Because I have a few.
Well, you know, playing against a guy.
He was so good.
Playing against a guy and then being able to look back on it, you know, almost 25 years later, two entirely different things. Yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy. He's the kind of guy you love him when he's on your team, but when he's on the other team, you're like, oh man, you know, it's a little much. But no, entertaining, great player, and he should be a lot of fun to listen to on Sunday night. Yeah, We've been saying all year long that Syracuse is a team that won a ton of one-goal games. They just won another close one this past weekend over Colgate. Was that a one-goal game against the Raiders?
I think it was a two-goal game.
Two goals, okay, but still. And everybody keeps saying, you know, Syracuse is a team that could be a championship weekend and win the whole thing, or they could lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I'm saying they're going to lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I'm going with Yale. I'm going with Yale.
This is the last game of all the whole bracket that I picked in the first round because I stalled on it. But I'm going with Yale too. I think.
Copycat.
I think. I don't know. I like this Yale team a lot. I think they're well tested. They came back and got two really tough wins this past weekend to win the Ivy League championship. They have some star power of their own. I'm not saying that luck has run out on the Orange or that they're not a very good team in any way. I'm just, you know, I don't want to go chalk all the way around besides my Towson upset. I'm going to pick another upset. I'm going to go with Yale as well. I like this team. I'm going to pick the Yale Bulldogs.
Yeah, so when you look at the DNA of Yale, and look, Syracuse in the Dome, you've got that mystique, but it's
they're
been
fantastic. They've had a wonderful season.
Right, but I'm talking more about them getting the game in the Dome. So it's always the last game of the weekend.
Dome, sweet Dome.
Yeah, I mean, but it's always the last game of the weekend. And graduation in Syracuse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we've seen Syracuse lose twice in the last, you know, handful of years. Army beat them.
3 years ago.
And Bryant.
The Bryant Bulldogs.
Beat them. Look, you look at Yale. They face off well with Mackey at the dot. So him and Williams, that's going to be a battle. What wing plays are going to be, the wing play, who's going to have better coordination of the wings and who's going to be more buttoned up in that department. But offensively, this Yale team is, they're good. You know, Ben Reeves having another Tworton kind of season. Eric Scott in the midfield is great. And then you got a couple newcomers that have produced at a high level. Jackson Morrill, the attackman. And then you have Matt Gaudette inside.
Lucas Kotler.
Joe Sessa. You know, this is a group that can score goals. And defense and goaltending have been the biggest question marks of the year for Yale. And the way that they ended that championship game in the Ivy League against they played Brown, right? Yeah, Brown. That was impressive. That was impressive.
That was a fun game to watch, too.
You know, so I'm look, Mariano, Salcedo, do they have anybody that can match up on them? That's the big question. That's a huge question. Aiden Hines, the game I did, the one game I did for ESPNU this year, you know, Aiden Hines shut down Michael Sowers. You know, could he take Mariano or you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. But
that's a tough matchup for the number two seed to get Yale.
Well, you know, look, the Ivy League is down a little bit this year. It was pretty well established going into the tournament. It was going to be a one bid league, but no, that's a tough. Yale's a good team. Yale's
really good.
They need to find some postseason success. You know, they lost a couple years ago to Maryland.
They lost a year ago to Navy,
but that was Michael Quinn, their best defenseman, was trying to come back and play on one leg. But, I mean, who could forget a couple of years ago, Yale-Syracuse in the quarterfinals at College Park and, you know, late if not overtime. I can't remember if that was overtime or just – anyway, you know, I like Yale. I like Yale in this game.
All right, there you have it. All right, Dix, we've picked the first round. We've broken down the bracket.
It took a long time to pick that first round.
But now it's time for the give and go.
All right.
And here's what the topic tonight is.
Go ahead.
Who are – and we'll say the last 25 years.
25 years, okay.
The three.
So if we're doing math, 25.
Take
7
one,
minus 17. 5 is 2. 2. Carry the 1. 92.
You're right.
1992.
Wow, I really thought you were going to give me a jokey answer.
Look at me.
Or just be wrong. But you nailed it.
1992. Yeah. My sophomore year at Hopkins.
Yeah, so
the Franklin Field semifinal loss to Syracuse, where we wore the all black in 100-degree weather.
Yeah, I remember that. I was I remember being, this is my memory of that. I went to Dewey Beach with my buddies for the weekend. I did not go to the lacrosse championships in Franklin Field, but I remember getting the Baltimore Sun on like that Sunday morning and reading about the game, because back then there wasn't the internet and you had to, you know, you call somebody newspaper. Or you looked at the newspaper to find out who won because the games weren't even on TV. And that was what the story was. It was like Hopkins came out in these all black uniforms.
That's not why we. That's not
on the
why.
Turf,
we,
and it was 100 degrees. It was really hot. It was a great day to be at the beach.
Sure, it's not why we lost. But, we lost because we allowed 21 freaking goals.
But the picture on the front page of the Sun Sports was like the Hopkins, like a bunch of players, like coming off like the track at Franklin Field. Yeah. You could see like the heat coming off the turf.
Yeah, it was hot.
Well,
the greatest part about that was Tony Seaman, my coach, was like, I took these uniforms and they were analyzed by the best scientists at Hopkins and they showed no effects. He was so, we were like, oh wow, coach did that? And the seniors were like, no, that never happened. We wore the all blacks against Towson in the quarterfinals and we won. So we wore the all blacks again against Syracuse. And John Barr, I think that was the guy from Syracuse. If that guy had 20 career goals, he scored 18 of them against Hopkins, and he had a great game that day. I remember John Barr from Syracuse just killed us.
Yeah, Princeton went on to beat the Orange 10-9 at two overtimes.
That was the joke. So that Saturday, it literally was like 100 degrees on the turf. That Monday was actually freezing. When Princeton beat Syracuse, I think it was like maybe 50 degrees. I'm not sure. So it was like, it was like two different seasons, you know, at Franklin Field for that 92 championship.
So here's your give and go. Who are the three most talented teams of the last 25 years in college lacrosse to not win the championship?
Oh, really? 95 Hopkins, 09 Cornell, 16 Maryland.
Last year's Maryland
team.
Okay. Yeah. And give me, I also have the 95 Hopkins team. That team, you know.
Undefeated.
You just graduated?
Yeah. So that was a year after me.
Man, that team was good.
Pacola Reardon.
And Jacobs, Pete Jacobs. First team All-Americans.
Brian Kuzma was a sophomore with, who else was on that defense?
Casey Gordon.
Yeah, Gordo was a middie.
Yeah, he was honorable mention All-American. Milford Marchant was second team All-American. Yeah. He was a middie. John Marcus was an honorable mention goalie. Dave Marr.
Chili.
Was an honorable mention All-American attackman.
Yeah.
So Hopkins' whole attack made first team All-America. Or made All-American.
Made All-American, yeah.
Hopkins' first midfield made All-America.
Right.
And their goalie and Brian Kuzma, as you said, went on to be first team All-America twice, won defensive player of the year, but was the honorable mention defenseman.
They're undefeated, and I think they, if I recall that correctly, last regular season game against Loyola was pretty close, and then it was a repeat the following week. Because this is back when they, 12 teams in the NCAAs, I think?
That sounds about right.
And they got a rematch against Loyola at Homewood, and I remember Hopkins just destroyed the Greyhounds. I think it was like 18-19-5. That was back when the top four seeds got the bye, and Hopkins was a top. I think they were the number one seed, and then they had to play Loyola again, and they crushed the Greyhounds. And then they went down to Maryland, and they just ran into a hot goaltender and just never got on track and lost that game. So that was, 95 Hopkins, that's a good pick.
Yeah. So I had them, that 95 Hopkins team on my list. I didn't have two of yours. So.
Well, 09 Cornell, I mean, that's the Max Sebald, that's the Cornell lead, and they failed to clear, and then Matt Abbott?
That was up in Foxborough.
Foxborough, the blind pass. And then the goal, and then Syracuse gets the game winner in overtime. Yeah. Never forget Cody Jamison scoring that game. The player who magically became eligible 11 games into the season for Syracuse, and he scores that game winner. I remember Dan Hardy for Syracuse made a great play in that sequence to get the ball over to Jamison or to keep it alive or something like that. But that 09 Cornell team was very good, and you felt bad for them. Max Seabold, I believe, was a first-team All-American that year.
He was.
And he's the one that couldn't get the – you know, all he had to do.
That Matt Moyer was a first-team All-American.
Who?
Matt Moyer, defenseman, long pole.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they had Tower Hill, went to my high school.
Okay.
They had John Glenn.
Was excellent.
Yeah.
Facing off and making plays.
I think – was that Rob Pinnell's freshman year?
Jeez, hard to remember.
I think so.
I think you might be right.
One of my teams was the 2007 Cornell team.
Yeah, they're good.
They lost the semifinals to Duke.
The Zach Greer last second goal. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had three first teamers that year: Seabold, Mitch Belisle, and Matt McGonigal.
Oh yeah, the goalie.
Yeah, it was the goalie, Matt McGonigal.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to say that wrong. And three second teamers:
mm-hmm.
David Mitchell was an attackman, Eric Pittard was an attackman, and John Glenn. So three first teamers and three second teams.
Yeah.
And lost. And so I only see saw
that. So I see how you're doing. You're doing it by like number of All-Americans.
Well, like I said, talented. But they had a good season. They made it to the Final Four and didn't win. While doing that, I was really looking at the Duke team from 2007.
Yes.
That team
very talented team.
Loaded.
Well, you might even look at the 08 team as being even better than that squad. Well, so that was
their fifth years on there?
Well, that was the fifth years. Yeah, it was. And that was Donowski. That was Greer. Brad Ross.
Oh, the team.
Ned Crotty was a freshman. He's the one that they called his number at the end of the
2007,
game.
2007, he was a sophomore.
Really?
2017 was a sophomore.
Well, this was 08. This 08 I'm talking 08. About.
So he was a junior.
So he was a junior? Okay. Yeah. But that was the year, because Hopkins used to play Duke in the regular season. Hopkins went down to Durham and lost, I think, 20-8. Duke just kicked their teeth in. And then you get the rematch in Foxborough. And I'll never forget, I was in Bristol working studio for ESPN. And they asked me, like, who wins this game? I'm like, look, it's going to be a lot closer. You know, winner of this game, it's going to be a two-goal game. That's what I said, I think. But I was like, two-goal game Duke, right? And Hopkins won that game. Mike Gavazdin in goal. They had Rabel, Stephen Pizer, Huntley. That's the Hopkins team that advanced to the national championship against Syracuse and lost to the Orange in 08.
Yeah, and that Duke team, again, there's a lot of the same guys from the 2007 team.
Yeah.
Who, Donowski, Greer, Nick O'Hara was a first-team midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
Ned Crotty, second team. Tony McDevitt, second team,
yeah,
defenseman.
McDevitt, yeah, sure.
Brad Ross, Max Quinzani. So all those guys, those offensive players were all on the 2007. Mm-hmm. Quinzani was a freshman. Crotty was a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
They still had Greer and Donowski on the two. So that's why I said 2007.
I'd say that Duke 08 team was better than the 07 team.
Probably were, because a lot of those guys who were seniors came back for another year.
Yeah.
Danny Loftus was the 13 goalie in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so my three, I'm going to go with 95 Hopkins, which you agree on. I'm going to go 2007 Duke, but I'm going to and 2007 Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are just indifferent. You're going to say the 2008 Duke team, which I don't disagree
with.
Well,
no, I said
you said Cornell in 2009.
Well, I said,
so we're almost on the same.
I mean, I just said Duke is a better team in 08 than they were in 07, but I'm going Hopkins 95, Cornell 09, Cornell 09 team to me. And then just because it was there, it was in their hands. And then Maryland last year, I thought Maryland was really, really good last year, and they seemed to have the game. And then some things happened, and Carolina made some plays, and before you know it, it's overtime, and then Cloutier sticks it, and you know we're going home. So you think about their midfielders, you know, Brian Cole and Henry West and Pat Young and. You had Rambo and Heacock on attack, and Connor Kelly playing at such a high level. You had Kyle Bernlohr, All American goaltender, doing his thing. That was a really good team, really really good team. Greg Danseglio at long stick midfield. Matt Neufeldt was out with a knee injury, and Danseglio, the transfer from Virginia, was going to play close defense, but just bumped up and played pole. So that was a I think we're using different criteria on this. You're looking at like all Americans. I'm looking at like teams that were like right there.
And I'm it's fair to do it either way. The way I was sort of looking at it is like, who are the best teams? Like, were there some undefeated teams who didn't even make it to the Final Four? Were there teams that, and Loyola in 2014, I think was 14-0, was the third seed and lost in the first round of the tournament. That's the one, because like, I asked a couple guys in the office, and Terry Foy suggested that team. They had a couple All-Americans.
I mean, 2012, they won the championship.
2014.
And that was a dominant run. 2014, was that the year that they played the Thompsons at home?
Yeah, they lost.
Yeah, and they ran them off the field. The Thompsons ran them off the field.
But that was a really talented team who didn't win. I mean, it's a lot of teams over the last 25 years. What are the ones that popped in your head? And those are the ones that popped in my head. And just doing some research, looking at, like, you know, star power, all-American, talented, is what I came up with. But good answers. That's why I throw this out there to you, because I wanted to see what your what your give and go was. All right, that's our give and go for this week. What to watch? All the games.
Yeah.
There's games.
Tournament.
In the noon, 2:30, 5, and 7:30 time slots, both on Saturday and Sunday. Enjoy them. This is the best time of the year. Get to a game if you can, or park yourself in front of the TV. This is what we've been waiting for all year as fans. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you next week.
Damn, that was long.
Was long.